Welcome to the Finding Grace in the Wilderness podcast. I'm your host, Sharon Hawkins. Here each week, we will share stories about how God's grace can be found during life's most difficult circumstances. Meet with me around the table as we chat with others who have found that God's faithfulness never ends. We will share truth and life and discuss faith, fears, struggles, and victories. Join us as we seek to grow deeper in relationship with Jesus, the one who makes a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. We're so glad you're here today. We have a special treat. My friend Marie Koth is joining us today. Marie and I have been friends for many years, and she is married to Chris. They live in Pickens, South Carolina. And she and Chris are members at Blue Ridge View Baptist Church. They've been in recovery ministry for 36 years. Their current recovery ministry is called Serenity Family Addiction Recovery, and she's going to be sharing about that. Join me in welcoming Marie Koth. Hi, Marie. Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm glad to do it. I'm glad to share my story.
Yeah, I know it's going to be such an encouragement for our audience. So I would love for you to start at the beginning, but please be sure to include the parts in your story. I know you will, where God's shown you his grace in your wilderness over and over and over.
A lot of it. I was very fortunate that the first 8 years of my life were great. My parents were great. My mother went to church. From the time I came home from the hospital, she took me to church. When I was 8, my dad got injured on the job, and he began drinking because he didn't want to get addicted to pain medicine. The surgery didn't work. He was in constant pain. And it just shows how in an instant, life can change dramatically. Mm-hmm. I went from, I was daddy's little girl, I followed him around like his shadow, he was wonderful, and then he became very abusive when he drank. And of course, that was most of the time. So he fell off his pedestal with a big thud. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't physically abusive towards me, it was verbal and emotional. But my mother got all of it. After he started drinking and becoming abusive, she started to drink, I guess, because she didn't know how to deal with it. That was her way of coping, was she drank. So I had two parents drinking. When my dad had the injury and got home from the hospital, she was very active in church. She taught the little kindergartners, and she was the pastor's secretary and just very involved in the church, and he complained. And so she quit, and she didn't go to church again until after he died. I was 9 when she quit going, and I was 40 when he died. So it was all those years she didn't go to church. Thank God she did. After he died, she went back to church. She got right with the Lord. She was wonderful till she died. You know, I mean, she had a good walk with the Lord. She got back with him. But after she stopped going to church, the church was about 3 blocks from our house. And so I got up and got ready, and I walked to church every Sunday. I went. You know, I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm. Thank God he put that church so close to your house.
Oh, and the other thing is that it was when I was 8 years old in Sunday school was when I got saved. And it wasn't one of those things where everybody was doing it. I was the only one that got saved that day. You know, it was just God drew me to him. And I always look back and I think he knew what was coming the next year. And he knew that I was going to need him. Right. So, you know, God's just awesome that way. He knew that I was going to need him, and that I wasn't going to have, it was going to be chaos and craziness, and I wouldn't know how to deal with it, and I could cry out to him.
His timing's so perfect.
It is. It's always perfect. So I did that until, I don't remember which year I was in junior high, but I know I was in junior high, and the church went away. It became a Hispanic church. I lived in Miami, And so it became a Hispanic church. And so I no longer had a church that I could walk to. I had no church. There was no church. It was a tough time because everybody that remembers their adolescent years, it's when we need more guidance and we need the support of our parents. And at that point in my life, I had to act like the parent. I had no guidance. I mean, there was a roof over my head. There was food in the house. My physical needs were met, but not my emotional needs at all. And in fact, it was bad emotionally.
Tell me about the discipleship from the time you got saved until the church closed the door.
I didn't get any at home because my mother just completely quit God. And that was really hard on me because how do you go from being so active in church to completely stopping and having nothing to do with God? There was one time I approached her about it, you know, getting right with God, and I got chewed out. I mean, I got attacked for saying that. I never said it again. But it was a Baptist church, and it had been an independent Baptist church, but the pastor that was there when I was going there had been a Southern Baptist pastor. And, you know, I hate to say it, but it's like, it's a big deal that you don't drink. And so I didn't feel comfortable telling anybody and telling the pastor or anybody at church what was going on. I never told anybody. Whatever I got in Sunday school and church is what I got. But I didn't have an individual that discipled me. I didn't have anybody that I could go to really and ask questions and all. And then when the church went away, I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing. And it was at a time when, you know, going into adolescence, I struggled. I really struggled because I had nobody in my life. I didn't know any Christian anywhere. I spent every summer with my grandparents, and my grandparents were wonderful, but they weren't Christians. So I had nobody. And God put a burden on me after I really surrendered to Him about discipling people, because I didn't get it, and I saw what it did in my life. And I went, I have the responsibility that I went strayed for 10 years. I made those choices. But I can't help but think that if somebody had been alongside me to disciple me and help me to grow in my walk with the Lord, that I might not have done that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have a friend who did have somebody disciple her, and she never strayed because somebody at her church took her under their wing and discipled her. So, I mean, I'm very happy for her that somebody did that, but I didn't get it.
It makes a lot of difference.
It makes a huge difference.
And so for those that are listening, you know, ideally we love it if someone in the church would see, you know, and we're both now very passionate. I know you are in your church. I am in mine, about discipleship and mentoring.
Yes.
And we're both involved in those programs, but we would like to see the church take a bigger role in discipleship.
Yes.
God's church. But sometimes, you know, that doesn't happen. So if we don't have someone come to disciple us, then we need to seek that out as a new believer. Because I think, in my opinion, everybody needs a mentor and everybody needs a mentee.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
what God meant when he said, go and make disciples.
Well,
we all need someone, and we need someone following us.
Exactly.
That's his plan.
And, you know, when we get saved, no matter what age, whether we're a child or an adult, it's okay. Now what?
Right.
How do I do this?
Right. That's right.
And, you know, I got a little bit, you know, because I was 8, you know, 9 when my mom quit going. And so I was like 12 probably. So I had 3 years of going to church before it went away.
But you had a lot going on at home too.
And it was,
against
yes.
your being in a good place
yes.
to be mentored and
yes.
discipled.
And another thing is that when you're living in a home with addiction and chaos, there's an unwritten rule that when you walk out the door, you act like everything's just fine. Mm-hmm. You don't let anybody know what's going on. And so, I mean, even my best friend that's like my sister that I've known her since she was born, she lived right behind us. She never knew that my dad was abusive. I never even told her.
Wow.
I mean, that's how strong that message is, that you don't let anybody know what's going on in this house. And I've heard that over and over from people. It wasn't just my home that was like that. That's the typical.
Mm-hmm. So God was taking care of you during that time. And yeah. He saved you right before that.
Right, before everything fell apart. Mm-hmm. There was one particular time that my dad was very physically abusive to my mom. And my brother, he was enough older than me that he was able to get on his bike and ride over to his friend's house. So he wasn't there for all the stuff that happened. I was.
He was older.
He was older than me by several years. And so he would just leave. I was the one that was stuck there and witnessed things. And in this particular time, it was really bad physical abuse. And I was there, and I was traumatized. I mean, you fight or flight, but the other is freeze. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me. I froze. I was so terrified that I froze. My mother was trying to get me to go to the neighbor and get help, and I couldn't move. She finally got loose and ran out. But after, and before that and after that, I mean, it was like I hated supper time, because that's when all the drinking would start before supper, and that's when the arguing and the fighting and, you know, all of that would happen. After that happened, I was so traumatized by it that every night after that, when it would start up, I would go in my room. I had a little closet. I would go in the closet in the dark, close the door, and stand there and plead to God to help my parents. I still hurt for that little girl. I've healed, but I hurt for that little girl. There was even, we had the school pictures or the whole class. And one day I had my box of the things that I saved from growing up, from school and everything. And I was in there looking for something else. And I came across those pictures. It happened that I had the same teacher in third grade when I was 8. And again in fourth grade when I was 9. She liked our group and wanted to have us another year. Mm-hmm. And I looked at, I was looking at the pictures and all the people that I remember from elementary school. But in the one in third grade, I was smiling and looking up and everything. And the one in fourth grade, I didn't even look up. And I had the saddest eyes. And when I saw that picture, I mean, I still, when I think about it, I just cry for that little girl who was hurting so badly. But God's amazing. I mean, it was a long journey to healing, but God can heal anything. He can heal anything.
Yes.
So I, as I got farther into my teen years, of course, the hormonal changes and everything, and you start having an interest in guys. And I did, but I was all, because of what I had witnessed, I was terrified of them too. I couldn't even stand for a male to touch me. And I wanted to have a boyfriend. And so I started smoking pot because it deadened that effect. It allowed me to have a relationship some way or another. Not that I was good at it, because I had such a terrible role model, but I did that to kind of function because I was such a mess. I eventually met my husband because all that I knew was alcoholics. It's like, my parents' generation were the ones that, my dad was in World War II. Mm-hmm. And, now they treat people for PTSD and all of that. Back then, you just had to wing it. And so the majority of the people in our neighborhood were alcoholics. They were all alcoholics.
Wow.
And it was common in that generation that went through all of that. Anyway, that's all I was around. That's what I knew. I didn't know how to have a healthy relationship. And so I ended up marrying an alcoholic because that's what I knew.
How old were you?
When I got married? 25. Mm-hmm. I was 25. He was 28. And, you know, it wasn't like he hid his drinking from me. Of course, you know, he was drinking. I was smoking pot. But 3 years into our marriage, he had a DUI. Thankfully, he didn't hurt anybody. He didn't, you know, he had an accident, but he didn't hurt anybody. But when he had his DUI, I got to my bottom. I had to admit to myself that I did what I never wanted to do, and that was marry an alcoholic. Because my parents were still active alcoholics. You know, they hadn't stopped drinking. And so that was a turning point for me. And I had to go to a class as a result of his DUI one time. And they told us about Al-Anon, which is for family members of alcoholics. So I found out about it. I was glad that there was a way to deal with all my mess. It was a framework to deal with it. But I was also scared to face all my baggage. I knew I was there for me. A lot of people go thinking they're going to fix the other person. I knew that wasn't the case. I was there to fix me. And it took me 10 months after I found out about Al-Anon to finally go. But from when I found out about it, I totally surrendered to the Lord. I was on the floor in the living room. I remember it. I don't remember what day it was exactly, but I said, God, I can't do this anymore. I don't know how to deal with these three alcoholics in my life. I cannot do it anymore. I'm giving them to you. I'm giving it all to you. And that was a turning point where I really totally surrendered everything to him. That was the beginning of my journey of healing. You know, can God wave a magic wand and heal us instantly? Yes, he's very capable of that.
Of course.
It doesn't very often happen that way. Mm-hmm. The one thing that he took from me during those years that I strayed, I started cursing like a sailor. And when I surrendered to him, I didn't ask him to take it away. It was just instantly gone. I never uttered another curse word from that moment on. I don't know why he decided to take it, but he did. Mm-hmm. he did take that one thing from me. And after Chris had his DUI and I surrendered, we started going to church. I hadn't been to church since my church went away when I was in junior high. The Al-Anon meeting that I went to happened to be in a Presbyterian church. Well, I didn't have a church. I didn't know what church to go to. So we started going to that one. And we went there for several years. But one of the things that made a difference was one time when we had communion, the preacher said, you know, promise God something that you'll do. And so I promised God that I would read the Bible every day. And so I started at bedtime. I'd sit in the bed and I said, I'll read one chapter every night. So I started just sitting there silently reading it. And this is how God works. After a while, Chris asked me to read it out loud. And then after a while, he started taking turns reading.
Wow.
And it took us 3 years, I think, at a chapter a day to get through the whole Bible. So God was working on him. And the other thing that I forgot is during those years when I strayed, the Holy Spirit kept working on me and put people in my life. That when I was in college, I met somebody. We never had a class together. We didn't live in the same dorm. We were just walking across campus when we first got there, and we were the first ones that said hi back. Mm-hmm. And we became friends. And we're still friends all these years later. But she was a very strong Christian. And it's like I led a dual life because I would go with her like to children's homes and sing the Christian songs and all that. And then I'd come back and I'd smoke pot with one of my friends. So I was leading a double life, mm-hmm. but God never let go of me. He right. kept putting people in my life and circumstances to, I'm here. I still want you. I haven't gone away. You have.
And those things probably brought you encouragement with dealing with three addicts in your life.
Yeah.
To remind you, hey, I'm still here.
Yeah, right? I'm still here. I haven't left you.
Yeah.
I guess I would say I was angry with God when I strayed, because I had prayed for asking him to fix my family for a lot of years, and things didn't get better. Mm-hmm. Anything, they got worse. And I kind of had that, well, you know, why am I bothering to even try to do this? Live as a Christian. Yeah. Plus, you know, I think in our youth and our late teens and early 20s, we can be rebellious about everything. And I was, you know, it was like I rebelled. Why am I still doing it? Why am I even bothering? And of course, once we do that, Satan kicks in. Mm-hmm. Here's my turn. You know, not that, I mean, of course, I didn't lose my salvation. That's impossible. But Satan worked in me, you know, led me down a bad road. I mean, I let him in, and then he took me farther and farther down a road I really didn't, I'm sorry that I went down. But
now, are you talking about your teenage years?
Yeah. It was from 18 to 28. I was still okay. In Miami. And 20, I was 28 when Chris had his DUI and I surrendered.
Right.
So okay. It was from 18.
Married at 25.
Yeah, at 25. So I married him during the years when I was straying. But, you know, God doesn't let go of us. And he will allow us, if this is what we want, he'll say, okay, do it your way. And he'll let us go until we get, it's like the prodigal son, you know, until we get to the end of our rope and we say, what am I doing? And then he's there with open arms, taking us back. I mean, I guess the positive thing about it was because I went through all of that, that when I surrendered everything to him, I really surrendered everything to him. And I have never wavered in my, I mean, of course, I've grown in my walk with him, but I've never wavered. I never strayed again in any way, you know, at all. I stayed faithful to my walk with him. So, I mean, that's the positive thing, I guess, right. Out of all of it, is that when he got me, he really got me.
Yes, he did.
I started going to Al-Anon after 10 months after I found out about it. Of course, I didn't understand boundaries. There weren't healthy boundaries in my family. But I learned about boundaries, and they're necessary. And if you don't know what a boundary is, it's that everybody has their space. And we have to protect that space so that people that don't have boundaries won't overstep our boundaries and bring their unhealthiness into our lives. The problem is, a lot of times when we've been hurt, we put up too strong a boundary. We put up a wall.
Right.
And so we have to learn, like we say in our recovery, is that we're either at one extreme with things or the other extreme. And the goal is to come to the middle and balance. Mm-hmm. That's what we need in our lives, is balance. Spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally, in every way.
Right.
We need balance. So I learned to set boundaries. I had to set healthy boundaries with my parents. And I did. And, you know, and the thing was, I didn't set the boundary in the middle of an outburst with them. I did it when I was calm and they were calm, and I just let them know that this is where I am. If you do this, this is what I'm going to do. And you know, I can give the example. I mean, when we would go, I was married then, and we would go over to their house. It was 11 miles from our house to their house. And when we'd get there, one would pull me over and tell me how bad that one was, and the other one would do the other with my husband. No, and so we were like the rope and the tug of war. Mm-hmm. And we were tired of it. So I just told them, I said, those problems are yours. They're not mine. Mm-hmm. And we will not be pulled into them anymore. And so when we come to visit you, if you start up, we will turn right around and walk out the door and leave. Well, it only took two times and they quit doing it. And I mean, literally, we drove 11 miles over in city traffic. This is not like in Pickens where there's, you know, you just zoom down to the next town. No, it was in city traffic. So we'd drive 11 miles over there. They started up and we turned around. Within 1 minute, we were gone. And we did that twice. and they never did it again because they wanted us in their lives. So boundaries work. They work very well, but we have to do it with love. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you don't do it in the middle of when you're angry about something. You tell, you have to let the person know that this is the boundary. Mm-hmm. This is where I am. And if you overstep that boundary, this is what I will do.
And then you have to stick with
it. And you have to follow through. If you don't have the strength to follow through and enforce the boundary, then you need to just keep your mouth shut. You know, don't ever say it makes it worse. Mm-hmm. If you say it and you don't follow through.
Right.
So, of course, did I do this immediately when I got into recovery? No, I had to get healthier. Mm-hmm. Some first, I had to gain some emotional health and strength. Of course, God was a big part of that. You know, I had His strength and His power to rely on. And I you know, I learned that more and more, that I could count on Him to give me what I needed. And that was an important part, one of the first things that I really learned that made a difference. Because I would get angry. When I'd look at why am I angry, usually it was because I had allowed somebody to overstep my boundaries. So I was really angry at myself. Mm-hmm. So I started to notice that, you know, whenever I got angry about something, I would evaluate it and say, okay, what am I really angry about? And so that helped me identify areas where I needed boundaries.
Right.
Because I would see, you know, how I reacted.
This concludes part one of my interview with Marie Koth. Please join us next week for part two of her amazing story. If you would like to learn more information about her Christian 12-step program, please contact me at SharonHawkins.net, and under the Contact tab, please write to let me know of your interest and I will connect you to Marie. Thank you again, Marie, for being with us today and for your incredible story of encouragement. Let us never forget that no matter what we go through as a child of God, He will provide whatever grace we need in the wilderness. Thank you for listening to this episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. May God lead you safely through your wilderness as you trust Him, and may His river of grace always flood your desert times. He is doing a new thing. Let's not miss it. Subscribe or follow to make sure you don't miss a single episode. See you here next time.